I'd like to call to order the afternoon meeting of February 18th of the City of Goleta. Would you please rise and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Councilmember Farr.
Here.
Councilmember Easton.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Perotti.
Here.
Mayor Bennett.
Here. Now's the time for public forum to present anything to the council that you may wish that's not on the today's agenda that's in the purview of the City of Goleta. I have one speaker slip that would like to do that. Are there any more, Madam Clerk?
There are no other speaker slips.
Thank you. Would Allison Gray please come forward?
Hi, thank you. I'm the branch supervisor at the Goleta Library, and I'm here to introduce to you our new children's librarian, Ann Leonard Curtin. She's here, and I just wanted to give you all a chance to meet her. She's going to tell you a little bit about her background. We're very fortunate to have her. We're very sorry to have lost Judy, and we're also very sorry that we can't stay here for the presentation because we've got to get back and cover the reference desk. But I did want to give you a chance to meet Anne, and she's going to tell you a little bit about her background and what she's working on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Allison. I'm Anne again. I've been at the Goleta Library since last September. I was there part-time. I also was working at Girls Inc. on the east side, downtown, for about 3.5 years as the children's librarian there. And since then, I graduated from the University of Illinois, so a lot colder than here. I've enjoyed it for the past few years. And yeah, I'm staying busy. I have big shoes to fill, so I've been very busy getting ready for the summer reading program. Dr. Seuss's birthday's coming up, so lots of activity.
And we're hoping to come to you quarterly and give you reports as to what's going on at the library. We haven't done that previously, but we're hoping that you might add us to your agenda and allow us to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Congratulations, Judy.
Mr. Singer, any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
As a matter of fact, there is an adjusted agenda for the day in that the matter of your public hearing this afternoon, the appeal of a Planning Commission approval of a single-family dwelling and detached residential second unit is going to be continued. We'll announce that when we get to it, but just wanted the public to know that now. And then the council does not have a need to meet this evening because the Venico item has also been postponed at the applicant's request.
Okay. Thank you very much. Madam Clerk, A1.
Item A1, Certificate of Recognition, Judith Savage, retiring Goleta Children's Librarian.
Would Judith like to come forward? Microphone over here so everybody can hear. Can everybody hear okay? Very good. Well, I'm going to read to you on behalf of the Goleta City Council. The City Council, the City of Goleta, presents this certificate of recognition to Judith Savage, who since 1973 has been working tirelessly and with extreme dedication to administer years of story times for young children, summer reading clubs, and has scheduled special programming for the entire Santa Barbara Public Library system. Ms. Savage began her career in a part-time capacity as a page in the circulation work unit and became a full-time reference librarian in 1981. In 1987, Ms. Savage became the children's librarian at the Goleta Library, earning its reputation as a family library. This award is presented for her professionalism, dedication, and perseverance during her years of service with the library. The City Council of the City of Goleta proudly honors Judith Savage for her 30 years of dedicated service to the community, approved on the 18th day of February, 2014. Congratulations. Point that one. Now, would you like to say a few words? Okay.
So, I would like to thank the Goleta City Council for honoring me this afternoon. Thank you very, very much. It's very nice. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the City of Santa Barbara and Santa Barbara County, since it's a joint project to provide for our Goleta Library. And I think all three agencies have contributed to allowing me to have my career as a librarian. I'm thankful to the community that voted in Measure L, which has also provided for Goleta over the years and allowed Goleta to have a full-time children's librarian. To paraphrase a popular quote, it takes a whole village to raise a library. Mm-hmm. I would like to take a moment and acknowledge a few of the many that contributed to Goleta and made it possible to stretch our services during my time there. The Friends of the Goleta Library must be thanked for all that they did and do to maintain library services. I saw from the inside out how important their fundraising and hard work is to the health of the library. So thank you, friends. During my time at the library, there were other volunteering organizations that are groups in the community that just come and donate services, like the Goleta Depot, the Chocolate Gallery, Sandcastle Music, Channel City Kennel Club, to name just a few. I'm very thankful for the wonderful staff and volunteers I've worked with over the past few years. I'm thankful to Pam Berry, who let me move over from Central Library to Goleta when the opening for children's occurred. Students from local high schools and adults from the community have contributed much to the library. There's too many individuals to name, but there are some longtime volunteers who are behind me. And thank you for making my life as a children's librarian, as a librarian, so wonderful. And I'm thankful to the public who so enthusiastically use the library and make our job so fulfilling. We don't, in the course of life, really say thank you. I don't think. I haven't. But now know that you all mean the world to me. My years with the library have been a labor of love, and I again thank you for giving me those years. I look forward now to becoming an enthusiastic user of the Goleta Library and finding for myself the joy of lifelong learning. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to personally thank Judy for her years of service. You know, many of you don't know, but she met my wife in junior high school. And they've known each other all these years. But on behalf of the hundreds and hundreds of children that have benefited from your service, thank you very much.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I'd like to echo exactly what Councilmember Aceves has just said, that, you know, having two daughters that I've raised in Goleta and having gone to the library as they were growing up and always seeing your familiar face and your helpful attitude, and you were so pleasant, and I can't imagine what the library will be without you. But thank you for all your years. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Now, I'm the newcomer, but my wife started supporting me through graduate school in the Children's Library of New Haven, Connecticut, and I have some idea of how rewarding that can be and how problematic it can be at other times. You probably didn't have the problem as she did, but she had to keep cleaning the whiskey bottles out of the stacks since the library was right on the New Haven Green. Thank you for your service. All librarians should be expected and should get far more than they do. Thank you.
Well, I didn't know Judy personally, but I know what the library means to the community of Goleta, and I'm sure they were lucky. We were all lucky to have her good services there, and we're all grateful. I think everybody who lives in this community is grateful to the contribution that the library makes to all of us here in the city. So thank you, Judy, and thank everybody else that is associated with the Goleta Library.
I, too, would like to just offer my thanks from the community and all the hard work that you've put forth, plus all of the folks that have supported the Goleta Library over the years. We're blessed. I've been here about 44 years, lived and worked in the Valley, and I've heard nothing but tremendous, tremendous support for the library. And the community has always rallied around it, and we're blessed to have the Friends of Goleta Library that provide so much support, which allows the staff then to do the special things that they need to do that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do. So it's a tremendous synergy that we have in our community, and we're quite blessed. And you've played a major part in that, and I want to personally thank you and certainly thank you on behalf of the citizens of the city of Goleta. So once again, enjoy your retirement as it is. Okay. Okay, Madam Clerk, consent calendar.
Item B1, approval of the City Council meeting minutes of January 14, 2014. B2, acceptance of the January 2014 check register. B3, amendment to City Floodplain Management Ordinance to conduct the second reading by title only and waive further reading and adopt ordinance number 14-, next in order, entitled An Ordinance of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, amending Chapter 15.10 of the Goleta Municipal Code, Floodplain Management. B4, notice of completion for the fiscal year 2013-2014 pavement rehabilitation slurry seal project. To adopt resolution number 14-, next in order, entitled Resolution of the City Council of Goleta, California, authorizing the filing of a notice of completion for the fiscal year 2013-2014 pavement rehabilitation slurry seal project and establishing final quantities and direct the city clerk to file a notice of completion. B5, updated and new speed surveys. To adopt resolution number 14-, next in order, entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, establishing speed limits at various locations throughout the city. B6, amendment to professional services agreement for current planning permit processing services. B7, resolution conforming to City Council action on the Goodland Coalition's appeal, case number 13-118-APP, to adopt resolution number 14-, next in order, entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, reversing the Planning Commission decision approving the McDonald's drive-through project at 6900 Marketplace Drive, case number 10-085-CUP-DPM.
Thank you. Council, does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent calendar? Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes, I'd like to pull B5.
I don't see any others. Is there a motion to approve items B1, B2, B3, B4, B6, and B7?
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to do that. I'd like to make one note on B7. Because of the vote that I took on the issue in question, I'd like to indicate that in the minutes.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
On B7, I'd also like the clerk to indicate that I'm voting no on that item.
Thank you. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? So carried. Let's pull B5. Mayor Pro Tem Perotti.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I just want to start off by acknowledging that I understand that you have to do a traffic survey to be able to do, to have the enforcement, the radar enforcement. So I understand the 85th percentile. I understand how it works. Doesn't mean I like it. However, there's a piece of legislation that was passed in the year 2000 by Hannah Beth Jackson. It was AB 2767, where it took a look at, after you've done this traffic survey, it took a look at areas that maybe produced a lot of pedestrians. You know, maybe it was a church or a community center, a park, a school. So my question, would any of these roadways that have been surveyed, could we take another look possibly and possibly based on that lower the speed instead of keeping it at? I'm hearing that, I'm reading that all the speeds are staying the same except for one that went down. But I'm wondering if we could take a look at some of the other areas that do have a lot of foot traffic and schools and churches and parks.
Mayor Bennett and council members, the surveys do take that into account. Actually, many of them are actually reduced by 5 miles an hour per site because of either high bicycle volumes or pedestrian volumes. For most of these locations, they were reduced indeed by already 5 miles per hour, and they are consistent with what we are seeing between the 85th percentile and the reduction. The speed limits are remaining the same.
Can you help me understand also that I think it, for the public too, I know I've had a lot of questions regarding this, and I think you'd be better able to answer it, how one side of a street, I want to say maybe Cai Real between Fairview and Los Caneros, one side of the street going east would be 35 miles per hour. Directly across the street is a sign going west is 45. Can you explain that to the general public?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, the first time I kind of saw it, I went, I wonder why that is. But then realizing when you approach into a speed zone, the sign that you're reading tells you that from there until the next sign, that's the sign post, or that's the posted speed limit. So when you're heading eastbound on Calle Real toward Patterson, then what is happening is you're entering a 35 mile an hour zone. But when you're headed westbound, it's 35 and you're leaving it going into a 25 mile an hour zone because of the setup of the buildings is commercial and it and. So therefore, it's 25, although this particular survey showed that the speeds are now pretty much the same, one side or the other, but it's simply because one side it's going east, you're heading into it, mm-hmm. the other side you're heading out of it and into a different speed zone. So although on face value it feels a little odd, it is correct. And so as a driver, you're heading into westbound a commercial zone that was 25, but the radar studies are showing that people are driving consistently throughout the area.
So now with this new traffic surveys that we've done, we could have law enforcement out there with doing radar?
Correct. Okay. Or LIDAR. It gives them that version of using electronic equipment as opposed to having to pace a vehicle for a certain amount of time in order to establish what their speed is.
Okay. That would be great because I've received a few phone calls and a few emails regarding the speed on, well, that's one of the areas. But several other areas that are listed here.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Sims.
Just to be clear, I'm glad you covered the radar piece because the officers would not be able to use the radar unless they had a current survey. And that's why it's important that the city on a regular basis updates the surveys as some will expire. You'll see the survey dates on this list. But the law provides for prima facie speed limits through the residential districts, through schools. So that's not what we're talking about here. These streets here are your high traffic volume streets, Glen Annie, Hollister, Los Caneros, Patterson. And that's what we're talking about today. Is that not correct?
That is indeed correct. The prima facie applies to streets that it appears clear and visible to any average driver that you're in a residential zone versus a business district. There are many guidelines within the vehicle code that define those, but sometimes it's clearer to the public. But on a street like Kyrielle, Patterson, those have to be surveyed, and then you post the speeds based on the 85th percentile.
Great.
And appropriate engineering judgment associated with it.
Having done speed surveys myself, I appreciate the work that went into this because it's very, very technical. But thank you for doing that.
Want to make a motion?
I have a question. And I appreciate the work that goes into these things, too. I know it doesn't just happen. It takes work, takes field work to be done in order to come up with the appropriate and proper information. It indicates that there's a 5 to 7 year span that these surveys are done. Is that accurate?
Actually, it's between 3 and 10 that the surveys can be used based upon, once again, the vehicle code's criteria. Whether or not conditions change, development happens, you put in a roundabout, who knows what things may occur that would require you to do it sooner. But if things are pretty stagnant and an area doesn't change, you can actually postpone it 10 years before having to do a survey. But that's, once again, with the engineering judgment that essentially everything is remaining the same, whether it be traffic volumes and all the different factors that go into the survey.
Okay, well, then that raises the question, did any of these streets that were surveyed, did they run out of their time?
Yes, there were some of these streets that did run out of past anywhere from a year out of date to about a month out of date.
And what can we do in the future to prevent that from happening?
Well, couple of things, and I'm sure that there are many options that actually could be done, but one of them is currently we only have a singular traffic engineer consultant that we use, and there's a couple of different things that we could do to improve our ability to do it. Is with you, when you only have one consultant doing the work, sometimes workload doesn't permit that. We could go to multiple consultants for traffic engineering, much like we do on some other engineering services, although as a city I think we're finding that it might be even more prudent to have a traffic engineer on staff that would then facilitate allowing us to do this and be more focused on all of our traffic needs, whether it be stop signs, speed surveys, requests for no parking, any of those issues.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the information. Back to council.
I'll make the motion.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I move to staff's recommendation to adopt resolution number 14, next in order, entitled A Resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, establishing speed limits at various locations throughout the city.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Let the record show it's unanimous. Madam Clerk, C1.
Item C1, Supplemental Report 13-125-EPP, Appeal of Planning Commission Approval of a Single-Family Dwelling and Detached Residential Second Unit located at 810 North Fairview Avenue, Assessor parcel numbers APN 069-070-036 -037 -038.
Thank you. As you can note on the agenda, it's indicated that we continue this item. There is not a time or date certain. So is there a motion for continuance?
Mr. Mayor, before that, I might just have one question of staff or the city attorney.
Okay.
On the fiscal impacts, where it says the attorney's time and excess of the appeal have been borne by the city, do we have any idea as to how much money we will incur or could incur on this project on the city's dime?
I don't know that at this point, and I'm not sure how much work is going to be required before this item will actually be ready for council consideration, but we can certainly pull that information together for you and have that available for you.
Then I would ask if this item does come back to council that item be addressed in the staff report.
Will do.
Mr. Mayor, then I would move that this item be continued to a future date.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded to continue this item to a future date and time. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, so carried, unanimous. Madam Clerk, D.
Item D1, fiscal year 2013-2014, mid-year financial review.
Mr. Singer or Ms. Rivera?
Ms. Rivera.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Over the past few years, these quarterly updates have provided me the opportunity to present council with, for the most part, some very positive news. This update is somewhat different. Instead of describing the financial outlook at this mid-quarter as simply positive, I would say that it's more appropriately described as pretty remarkable. Because as we can see, we're looking at nearly a 5% increase to general fund revenues as of this mid-year. Oops. Let me take one step back here. Of that $1,062,000 increase in revenues, 85% of that is made up of changes in sales tax and transient occupancy tax, which is a reminder to the council, is the most vulnerable revenue source to economic conditions, meaning that they will likely be impacted to changes in the economy, such as the recent recessionary period that we've all experienced. Increases in licenses and service charges make up another 6%, while reimbursements round out the additional 9%. And that makes up the $1,062,000. This chart summarizes the dollar impact to every one of those revenue categories. As you can see, both bed tax, described here as TLT, and sales tax are predicted to generate over $6.8 million each in this current year. This now makes TLT the city's single largest revenue source for the general fund, and sales tax a close second. In terms of what's causing these positive changes to the city's revenue source, in sales tax, it's due to a one-time true-up adjustment that's being reflected in this current year. It is a one-time nature, and we don't expect it to reoccur in future years. In bed tax, it relates to the strong performance of some of the city's largest revenue-generating facilities. And it only takes a couple to make a significant difference, as is seen here. The licenses and service charges categories is driven by activity related to development activity that's taking place. As you will see a little later, any time that there is increased activity that relates to building inspection, plan check fees, and so forth, there is also a corresponding cost to that as the city contracts that out for about 75% of the additional revenue generated. The last category is in revenue adjustments is for reimbursements, and this primarily deals with reimbursement for tenant improvements that the city is anticipating on receiving from the landlord. It was negotiated through the contract on this lease, and there will also be some associated expenditure requests that will correspond to this reimbursement. Now that we've dealt with the revenue aspect, here are the expenditures. The expenditure requests for mid-year equal about $348,000. I will cover the largest items here. The first is professional services for the city manager's department for $25,000, and that is to cover some of the expenses incurred in a couple of different projects that has have already been undertaken by this department, including the classification personnel cost plan, and also let me refer to my notes on this one because the name of the project is slipping my mind right now. Oh, and the public opinion survey that was also undertaken. There's also a request for almost $126,000 in legal professional services. This again is being requested to cover costs previously anticipated and from money set aside in the defense litigation reserve. So these monies are being expensed at this point. You will see a transfer in from reserves for an equal amount. There is also about $38,000 related to the increased development activity that, as I mentioned, has a corresponding cost to that. And another $55,000 is requested for completion of the Parks and Recs need assessment. And then there is the last two items on this list equal $85,250. That is the amount of the tenant improvement monies being reimbursed to the city and being utilized for additional improvements to the council chamber project, as well as to future improvements for the break room and recarpeting within City Hall. Do we have any questions on any of these expenditure requests at this point? Hearing none.
Wait a minute. Oh.
Mr. Farr?
Go ahead, then I'll go after you.
Did we discuss the, or is it within our purview to discuss, modifying, changing out the purpose of conference room 2 and making it a break room? Is that something we discussed?
I can respond, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. That has not been discussed by the council. The use of the facility is something that generally, staff has, you know, most to do with in terms of the functional use. But the council has established a facilities subcommittee of the council, and they're scheduled to meet, I think, the second week in March to go over the proposed plans for this, pending, of course, council's actions today. We won't be losing a conference room. We have now a secured space upstairs, so we are not minimizing the use of meeting space. Obviously, it's not quite as versatile upstairs because it won't be as accessible to the public since we don't have elevators. Nevertheless, we'll still be able to use it both internally and for those that are able. So we're not looking to minimize that that space so much as maximize the opportunity for employees and for that matter, anyone using this room to have a better ancillary use next to us.
I actually had a question on that, Mr. Singer, because when this came before us at the Finance Committee, I specifically asked for the questions to come back to the answers to come back to us before the meeting so we knew what was going on, because evidently you were the only one that knew about this, and my concerns are multifold. First of all, we don't have enough meeting space. And if you're saying that we're going to be able to use one upstairs, it's not handicap accessible.
That's correct.
There isn't an elevator going up there. So that leaves us with conference room 1, or we go all the way to the other side in Public Works and use that one there. But in the 7-plus years I've been on this council, we've moved the conference rooms a number of times because we constantly need meeting space. And anytime we have more than 3 people that wants to meet with council, we have to fight for space. And sometimes it becomes very difficult because we can't fit 3 extra people in our little offices. So I can't support allocating the money until those questions are answered. I wish you had gone to the committee and had this come back to us as a committee recommendation instead of staff request. And secondly, where is the money coming from? I mean, to spend this kind of money mid-year, I don't think is the right thing to do when we're talking about $58,000. I can understand the carpet replacement. That's, you know, that's on a schedule throughout City Hall. But to create another room and then have to build the infrastructure for that room, for a break room, is going to come at a cost of having the meeting space. So I would hope that council would delay action on this one until the committee has a chance to vet it out and then come back for an allocation, because as it's written, and that's the other thing that's very frustrating. We have a list here, but nothing's really been vetted. There isn't any attached reports to justify the additional expenditures other than staff recommendation. So on that particular item, I really have a problem with. The second item has to do with the professional services. We've allocated money in your account for professional services. I don't know where this $25,000 is going to. Can you answer that? Where is that $25,000 going to? Because the survey was done, but I thought that was already allocated with existing dollars. But now we're making an adjustment because we didn't have the money for it. Can I have a little more information on that one?
So, Mr. Mayor, should I answer those questions at this time?
Yeah.
So on the first question, the monies, as the staff report indicates, for the break room and future carpet are not taxpayer dollars. These are dollars that are provided by the landlord for tenant improvements. They have to be of a specific nature. In other words, we can't use it for equipment or just at our pleasure, because they're basically improvements that have to stay with the building. So carpet and paint are acceptable, whereas buying a refrigerator would not be. So these are monies that are still in that tenant improvement category. That's what we're suggesting is used for Conference Room 2. We are not diminishing the amount of meeting space. We know that that's a high priority. So we are not doing that with this conversion. If it's the council's pleasure that these types of detailed items, the use of our leased space, come to the full council for approvals, we can do that. And we can do that after the subcommittee, which you've established, takes up the item. And if you want to hold off on doing the budget allocation at that time, we can do that as well.
Mr. Singer, if I could, Mr. Mayor, the room that you're talking about converting to a break room is the only overflow room for this council chambers. So when this room is packed and we have to move people out, there's only two places. There's one there which has a television, or the other room which I don't think it has a television. So how do we accommodate the overflow cloud? I mean, that's why it needs to be vetted out in the committee instead of trying to vet it out here. And that's the problem I'm having.
So the room won't cease to be able to serve that need. And that'll be explained when we have the plans to lay out in front of the committee. And as I said, if the council would then like the whole item to come to the council after the committee, we can do that. If that's what you're requesting.
Well, I definitely need more information, but you know, but it ties into to the next item, which is the council chamber remodel. I don't understand where the additional $27,000 is going to go into. I thought we've already budgeted sufficient monies for the council chambers when we did the redo. What is also needed from the tenant improvement allowance and related to the council chamber remodel? For $27,248, it's a very specific dollar amount.
I can let Ms. Rivera respond to that. Let me respond to the additional allocation, which was also part of Councilmember Aceves's question of the $25,000 in professional services. This is the account that we utilize for a lot of the council priorities that come about throughout the fiscal year, including this fiscal year needing to do the comp class study. And, of course, the survey, as Councilmember Aceves indicated, for the revenue neutrality piece, and some monies that were spent at the end of last year with some assistance on public relations. And so those funds are basically depleted. In fact, when you add them all up, there's not sufficient funds in that account. So we would have to take them from another line item within my budget or within a council budget. The request for the additional money would just be to give flexibility throughout the year, but if the council would prefer to make that a smaller amount or a larger amount, that's at your discretion.
I thought we just did a survey. What was the public relations thing that we did?
You worked with Madrid and Associates towards the end of last year in producing the survey and talking about different strategies for public outreach.
Okay, I didn't know the mechanics of who produced the survey, but that was part of the survey cost was going through Madrid and Associates?
It was separate contract.
Okay.
Any further questions?
No, thank you.
Mayor, if I may.
Go ahead.
Can I address the question in regards to the additional allocation for the Council Chambers project? The $27,248 being requested, Council Member Aceves is correct. The improvements have already been made while they were being performed. Staff anticipated using a portion of the tenant improvement monies coming in and covering costs of the project. So the allocations that council previously made were of from the general fund and from the facilities DIF, the development impact fees. Those were the funds that were previously allocated. Now what we're talking about is the portion of tenant improvement monies that are going to cover the excess costs beyond what the council allocated from general funds and from development impact fees.
And these qualify for the tenant improvement dollars?
That is correct.
Thank you. Mr. Farr.
If you clarify something for me, I'd appreciate it. Let's take the third item there, the one-time allocation of $58,000. Is all of that reimbursed out of tenant improvement allowance?
Yes. The final two items, which would be the council chamber projects and the break room and carpeting, those two items equal $85,248 exactly. That is the exact amount that we are asking council to increase projections in reimbursements to account for the tenant improvement monies being received from the landlord.
So, in effect, we're covering a shortfall, and we'll get it back and reduce rents? How does that work?
We will, I believe we'll either deduct it from the rent payment, or we will get an actual check. I'm not sure the mechanics, but at the end of the day, it's dollar for dollar, what we're asking as an increase versus what we're receiving.
All right. Is there, do we have any idea, do you have a ballpark estimate as to what that tenant improvement allowance is as a percentage of our rent?
As our percentage of our rent?
That was, Councilmember Farr, in our last rent amendment to our lease agreement, we had entered into an agreement with a fixed sum of tenant improvement. So it was out of a fixed sum that's been drawn down as we've made different tenant improvements.
Okay. And do you know what that is on an annual basis within $10,000 maybe?
It wasn't annualized. It was a fixed amount for the life of the lease extension. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was $100,000.
That's correct.
Okay. And how long did the lease extension run?
Yeah, I believe it may have been 5 years for the extension, and then that it also included additional space that we did the expansion of space upstairs, mm-hmm. extended the lease term for the remainder of the space as well.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Savis.
What's the balance in that account? Because if it's only $100,000 and we've done all that work upstairs, I guess we created a conference room upstairs, and we have done other tenant improvements since we signed that new lease, and now we're asking for another $85,000. How much is in that account?
Exactly $85,248. So this will essentially deplete the tenant allowance afforded within that agreement.
The monies were not eligible to be spent upstairs. So they weren't part of the lease extension for the space upstairs. Did not include that.
Any further questions? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the resolution as requested by staff?
Well, actually, I have another subject I would like to address in this report. Is that the time to do that now?
If it's a part of the report.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the first page, we have the infamous triple flip, the 25% of the sales tax and what was once 65% motor vehicle license fees are now paid as property taxes. Why did we do that? What was the thinking behind doing that? And I guess what I'm really getting at here is this shifting it from a lower tax to a higher tax that the county then comes and gets a bigger percentage of.
Okay. I will do my best to answer your questions, but keep in mind that the logic behind this was not mine. But
let me just step in here real quick. It's a real simple matter. This is state law.
Mm-hmm.
We have no say-so. We live what the state has done to us. This was done during Governor Schwarzenegger's period of time. It's called the triple flip. My understanding is the triple flip is going to go away in, what, another year or so? It's getting pretty close.
2018 or 16.
I think it's sooner than that, to be honest. I think I've heard in any case it's coming to an end sooner than later. But again, we have no say-so. We have nothing to do with this. It is state law, and we just have to deal with it as it's presented to us by the state.
Yeah, well, I'm for dealing with things that can't be avoided. I'm just trying to make up the tally here. Now, does this work to the county's advantage because we're shifting these revenues over to property tax, and since they take 50% of our property tax, does it work to their advantage, this triple flip?
No, it does not, because they are accounted for separately. The sales tax portion is accounted for separately at this point.
All right, and in the future that'll be the case as well?
In the future it will go away, the sales tax portion of it. And the motor vehicle license fee portion of it, we're being reimbursed in a form of a property tax, and it is not included in the calculation for revenue neutrality.
All right. And one more technical question, if I might. It appears that the reserve funds are moved in and out on an annual basis. Last year's are moved in, and then they're allocated for the following year. It will be allocated again. That is, there'll be adjustments in it every year. And it appears that the reserves are added in here at the end of the year, and then presumably acknowledged in the coming year. Is that?
That is correct. The unassigned fund balance reserve is the basically the collection spot for any monies not allocated for a specific purpose.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Parati.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know you haven't covered the gas tax revenue yet. This is an appropriate time to ask that question. I'm just curious to why the revenue projections for 13-14, the decrease, what's going on with that? Why are we so much better this year than next year?
Well, the projections are those coming from the state, and those allocations or those projections are based on, one, the actual estimate for the use of gas, so for the purchase, and also what they estimate gas prices to be within the next year. And so one of the things that's being taken into account is that cars are becoming more fuel efficient, and therefore there is a decrease in consumption. And also, based on the trend that was occurring over this past year, which as of this weekend may no longer be the case, but gas prices were on the decline. So, again, these numbers will change from time to time. The Department of Finance typically issues at least two estimate revisions throughout the year. And at this point, what we as staff recommend is following their projections. But if I may, I will continue. I have a few more slides to cover on this presentation.
Oh, sorry about that. Didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. So to finalize the general fund review, we're looking at revenues of a little over $1,062,000. Expenditures allocations as presented are for about $348,000, leaving the city better off by approximately $714,000, of which $644,000 is of an ongoing nature. And that, again, is due to the activity that we're seeing in the bed tax. Now, when we talk about the reserve activity, again, we talked about the $125,000 allocation for legal professional services coming from the litigation defense reserve. So the litigation defense reserve will see a decrease of that same amount, about $126,000. In the unassigned fund balance, we will see an increase of about $90,000. Street maintenance reserve will see an increase of $150,000 if council approves the setting aside of the additional monies towards the street maintenance. And staff is also recommending a $600,000 increase or transfer into the City Hall Acquisition Reserve in anticipation of the city in the near future owning its own facility. And this gives you a glimpse of the ending fund balance or the ending balances or projected balances in all of the reserves that the city currently has. That summarizes general fund activity. As we go into the other funds, we'll go into the start with Measure A, which at this point, in Measure A activity, we are looking for allocations of nearly $40,000, $30,000 of which relate to the Stowe Canyon sidewalk infill, which is actually already allocated in the next fiscal year 14-15. What staff is requesting is that this money be allocated be moved from next year to this year so that this project can take place currently. So when all is said and done, there is about a net change of $10,000 additional dollars that's being requested out of Measure A monies that were previously not anticipated, and that is for the Ward Drive bike lane. Okay. The next fund is the GTIP fund. What we're looking at here is a $164,000 increase in allocations. Of that $164,000, $74,000 is coming from savings or reductions in existing allocations. About $54,000 from the Los Carneros Calle Real roundabout. That was a savings on that project that has now been completed. And another $20,000 from the Equal Fowler project. Additionally, $15,000 for the Hollister Avenue bridge replacement is also already budgeted in the next fiscal year. And so once again, staff is requesting that that money be used in this fiscal year because staff is ready to proceed with that project. Unless you have any questions, I'll go on to the Highway Bridge Replacement Program Fund. And staff is requesting an additional $30,000 for the Hollister Avenue Bridge project. And lastly, on other funds, is the public safety grant. We're looking at decreasing both revenue and expenditure projections for the public safety grant that usually handles the DUI checkpoints that the city performs. There's been a change in the by the grantor as far as how the monies are distributed. Now they will go directly to the sheriff's department for all contract cities instead of going through the city. And lastly, in regards to the general fund, the Finance Committee has also requested that council consider allocating about $66,000 for a dump truck that was requested by Public Works during the budget cycle. But since we were a little short on funds at the time, the issue is being brought up again for your consideration. And if it is approved, it would come out of the unassigned fund balance reserve. And unless you have any questions, yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I need to ask a few questions about the dump truck. Mr. Wagner knew I was going to ask that. I guess my first question would be, exactly what would we be using the truck for, and what have we been doing? And since we don't have one, are we leasing one when we need it, or can you help me understand the need for a dump truck?
Yeah, so you know that our maintenance crews, five guys, and they're multidisciplinary. I refer to them as kind of the hotshot crew. And what we've been trying to do over the years is give them the tools necessary to maximize their efficiency in the types of work they as a small crew can do without having to contract with a larger private maintenance contracting firm. So the type of work that you can do with a dump truck is obviously moving materials from one site to the other. The council recently approved the purchase of a tractor, Kubota tractor, that could actually excavate, drill fence posts, you know, things like that. But those materials a lot of times have to be hauled off. In the past, if we've needed a dump truck for a crew activity, we would typically have to rent. But most of the stuff just gets delayed, and we're unable to quickly get on certain things because we rely on our larger maintenance service contracts, and those are kind of done on a more of an annual basis. They come in, they do a lot of work, and then they leave. So these smaller tasks either are not being done because if we need a dump truck, they either have to wait for a private contractor to come on board, or we'd have to rent to use one. So the idea, again, is to maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of our small crew.
And help me understand, as far as our contract with Marburg, would they not be helping us pick up any of that's not items that they necessarily would help with?
No, they do pick up, though, when we have items left in the right-of-way. They'll come and help haul off couches, chairs. But our crew does do a lot of that with their own lift gate already, because that happens quite frequently, and sometimes it's Marburg might be able to schedule it Monday, the following Monday. That's nothing you want to leave out in over the weekend, because as soon as we see stuff being dumped and it's not picked up, people tend to think that that's okay to do. So more stuff gets dumped. So we try to get on that as quickly as we can. If the crew can do it, we do it ourselves. If it's too big an item, we'll have Marburg help us out.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Farr.
Does this thing have anything to do with the psyche of Public Works to have its own dump truck?
Perhaps with Bob. But he's not here to defend himself.
I was just saying that the only person who questions it would be the woman on the council, because the guys know intuitively that a dump truck's to be goofed around with. So.
Okay. Any other questions in regards to what's being proposed by staff and the committee? Mr. Easton.
If I might, I'll make a motion. Adopt resolution number 14, next in series, entitled A Resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California, amending the city's operating and CIP budget for fiscal year 2013-14.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I would ask the maker of the motion to consider an amendment to exclude the $58,000 for conference room 2, refer that to committee to be fully vetted. I would totally support the entire program if those questions had been answered when I asked them to come back prior to this meeting. So I'd like the committee to vet out whether we can organizationally lose a conference room before we approve the expenditure.
I'll agree to the amendment of the motion.
No, I'll second that amendment.
Okay.
Can I get some clarification, if I may? Are we amending only the expenditure side, or both the revenue and expenditure side related to that?
Well, obviously, it's the expenditure. The revenue is there if it's been allocated in our lease agreement, as far as $100,000. But I'm saying don't spend the 58 until the committee has a chance to vet it out. So, do you need further clarification on that one?
No, I think I understand what you're looking for.
Okay, a motion's been made and seconded as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, let the record show it's unanimous, 5-0. I'd just like to do one follow-up on that, too. I'm not sure it was clear to council, but the unassigned available fund balance for us, at least at this time for the balance of the year, is $818,118, which is above and beyond what we've already reserved for various and sundry accounts. So I just wanted to make that point. Okay, moving right along. Item E has to do with council comments and standing committee reports. Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Safety Committee meeting. Councilmember Aceves, would you like to report on that?
I knew you were going to give that one to me. We met on February 11th, and we had two main items to discuss. The first one was an update on 830 Serenidad Place, and the staff and the sheriff through the chief is working on that issue still and with our legal counsel. So it was just a discussion with no recommendations coming to council at that point. And then we also had just a brief discussion on making sure how we keep the council updated on emergencies that occur within, or events that occur within our jurisdiction that would be considered of an emergency nature. And that's basically it for the meeting, unless Mr. Mayor, you had something else to add.
No, I think you've done a great job in summing up what we did. Do you have any personal comments in regards to activity?
The only thing is, I know that we're going to meet on, is it Thursday night with the Joint Planning Commission and
yes,
and Council. We never really had a chance to ask some questions ahead of time that we wanted answered. And I would hope that the presentation is such a way that we can have enough time to vet out some issues. Especially dealing with a general plan, and because there's a lot of discussion out in the public that we're not abiding by the general plan. So I certainly want to make sure that staff has a lot of opportunity to discuss where we're at and where we're going, and being able to articulate those few items that actually have required a general plan amendment, which are really few and far between. So not having a chance to give input, I would just make it under council comments that hopefully staff is prepared to discuss that Thursday night.
Councilmember Easton, anything to report?
I've been taking advantage of the relative size of the agenda for today's meeting and taking care of some personal business that, that needed my attention.
Sounds good to me. Councilmember Farr.
A couple of things. Did we ever talk about...
Did we, I think I turned my phone on. Did we ever talk about the fact that Cottage was moving an intensive care unit down to Camarillo from Goleta Valley Hospital? Are we, Nick Welsh did a thing in the Independent on it, and I've got a an article on it. It's a, I wish I had brought it in. I wasn't thinking council comments would come at this time. I was thinking it was later. So, but there is something about they're moving a an intensive care unit down to Camarillo. No,
it's the subacute unit.
Okay,
that they're proposing to move down to Camarillo.
Now, is that something that we should weigh in on? Should we take a look at it, see if it's a hit to our community or a cost in? I mean, it's just a little surprising to me that edifice that was created around the original hospital doesn't have room for it. I mean, they spent $750 million on that thing. It wasn't our money, I know. But I'm just wondering, it seems like it's a hit, if you will, to Goleta Valley Hospital, and I don't remember discussing it at all.
We probably didn't discuss it because I don't know that it's in particularly our purview. As you indicated, it's not funded by the city. It's not a city or a district hospital. It's a private hospital, and they pretty much get to do what they choose to do. They choose the kind of services.
Well, actually, there was enormous public opposition to their closing the hospital by that same rationale.
I don't disagree. I'm not suggesting that people don't have input or could make a difference in doing so. But as far as the authority of the city, I mean, we really, in essence, are very limited if having any input other than expressing constituents' concerns.
Huh. Well, I would look at that a little differently and think that it's perhaps something we should take a position on as a city council saying, we're sorry to see this happen. And I don't know anybody who knows much about the functioning of the hospital over there. I don't know if it'll have any impact on it.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah. Go ahead.
May I suggest that Councilmember Farr bring the article in? Staff can take a look at it and maybe contact the hospital to find out more information. And if there's something in our legislative platform that might lend itself to a letter or bringing something to the council, we can look at that as well.
All right. And good. Thank you for that. We had a good feasibility study meeting here with the folks that are taking a look at the community center to see what might be done, and there's generally been a lot of community input on that. I think that's all to the good. And I received, and I'm sure we all received, a complaint about Cox Cable. Now, there again, that's not perhaps in our purview. I don't know. But his accusations were in this letter. Did we all receive that? That he wasn't getting what he was said he should be getting by contract. Is that something we should take a look at, Mr. Geis or Mr. Singer? What do you think?
Yes. Ms. Perotti forwarded that to me over the weekend, so we'll take a look at that.
All right.
Mr. Mayor, I would concur with the councilman on Cox Cable in that they are franchisee of the city. In any changes, there has to be a mechanism to bring it back to us for review, and maybe it's time for a Cox presentation to council.
The only point that I would caution, I think there's what's people have been complaining about Cox forever, as far as I know. And the comments this gentleman brought up in his email are not unusual. I personally have experienced the same problems he's speaking of. The issue, however, used to be in the purview of the city going back about 25 years. And cable companies did have impact from city councils all over the country. But they lobbied Congress, and Congress eliminated all of that. And it's even worse because they're not even controlled, as I understand, by the Public Utilities Commission. They're exempt from the Public Utilities Commission. They're exempt from any of the cities. The only franchise agreement, all we've got is money that we receive because they use the public right-of-way for their purposes, just like the other public utilities. But we don't even have a place to go other than, as I understand it, to Congress to deal with cable companies. So it's interesting, I think. This issue, as I say, has been ongoing for years and years. And I would love to hear a report from Cox, but at the end of the day, I don't think anything's going to change.
If, Mr. Geis, is that Mr. Geis? Sorry, Mr. Geis. I was actually had a meeting with Bob Geis and Mona Miyasato here, and I wanted to mention that too in the council comments about the RNA. But on this, Mr. Giles, on the on our agreement with Cox Cable, is there are there provisions in there for us to evaluate their performance? Because as the mayor has indicated, and you pretty much have to pay, I think, for a premium to get the internet service that you want. If there was an objective way to measure that, and if it was seriously deficient from what is promised, do we have any recourse?
Councilmember Farr, I did not receive the forwarded email, so I haven't seen it. I don't know what the nature of the complaints were, but just listening to the discussion right now, we do have a franchise agreement. It does have very limited role for the city to play in relation to how they run their business. It is primarily governed, as was said, by the FCC and federal law, and they have certain restrictions, certain payments that they have to make to us, certain programs that they have to work with us on that are part of that franchise agreement. And what that does is that allows them to use our public right-of-way for the infrastructure that's necessary to deliver their service to their customers. So there is some limited ability that the city has. I wouldn't want to give it any kind of hope or expectation that it can address certainly an issue that I haven't seen. So, but as Mr. Singer, I think, was suggesting, we could certainly look into that.
Well, there is, in our agreement with them, I would assume that there is some performance that is promised, and then if it can be proven that performance isn't achieved, then is there some mechanism for us to make our displeasure known?
Certainly.
Okay. Thanks. I'll forward that to you.
Thank you.
He has it now.
Any more? Mayor Pro Tem Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll try and do this quickly. On February the 5th, I participated in the Green Business Luncheon that was held in Buellton, and it was really an eye-opening experience to just hear and learn about all the businesses are doing. But they received awards and recognition. But I was wondering if maybe the city of Goleta might at some point recognize our local businesses that, you know, in for the public to hear what they've done. So that's just a thought that I would like to see happen at some point. We also had that same day the groundbreaking for Los Caneros Bridge project. On February the 7th, I was honored to do a ribbon cutting in behalf of the mayor at, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Crava Mega Family Self-Defense Center. And it was in Old Town on Magnolia, and I wish them really well. It's a great place and great owners and family-run business. It was really nice to see them and all the work they're doing. Then I met again with Saul Serrano from the CAC, Community Action Commission, South Coast Task Force on Youth Gangs. He tried to help me, bring me up to speed. There's a lot of things that he felt like I needed to know, history and moving forward. And I did give Mr. Singer, I didn't know how to disperse this to all of you, but there's a work plan for 2014, and Mr. Singer has the information, and I think he's going to leave it in your boxes, so you'll know what the heck that's all about when you get it.
Thank you.
On February the 13th, there was a meeting at the Central Coast Collaboration on Homelessness, C3H, and they're going to be having a summit. It's called Homelessness Action Summit. It's on Monday, February the 24th, and that's coming up. And there's two sessions. There's an afternoon session from 1 to 5, and then there's the evening session, which they have two incredible guest speakers, Philip Manango and Becky Canas. They're going to be speaking on, I think Becky was interviewed on 6060 not too long ago. So they're hoping to get, she's a director of 1,000 Homes campaign. So she's hoping to get a lot of people to participate and come out, and it's free. Let's see if there's any other. Oh, I just wanted to make a note that I want to make sure that everyone realizes that on the McDonald's drive-through, that I made a mention that we have this perfect opportunity to partner with the marketplace and the city to do some of the safety improvements that were mentioned, and one would be the sidewalk, and then hopefully the city would do share its cost of the crosswalk that leads to the sidewalk. So I'm just hoping, I didn't know where to put that in, but I'm just hoping that the city will take a look at that in the marketplace as well, and we can come together and get those things addressed. And that's all I have.
Thank you. I have nothing to report, so I would ask the city manager.
Mr. Mayor, before you go to the manager, could I have a second bite of the apple, just to one thing? Okay. I had an opportunity to tour the new Decker's complex. It's absolutely fantastic. But they did a really first-class job in building that thing. But more importantly, to the city of Goleta, right on the corner is 8,000 square feet of retail. And there's plenty of parking. So people can go visit. And there's seven different brands and help enhance our sales tax. So I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. I don't know if they're going to schedule a ribbon cutting for you anytime soon, but at least take a tour of the facility and you'll really be impressed. They have everything, workout rooms, places to eat, and retail. But the workout room is just for the employees, unfortunately.
Well, as I recall, when we did the groundbreaking, I believe the CEO did make the promise that we were going to be invited to help do the ribbon cutting. So I am looking forward to that, and I'm certain it'll happen in the near future now that they've moved in and getting themselves oriented. So, okay, now we can move on to the city manager's report.
As was noted earlier, the council will have an opportunity to meet in a joint session with the Planning Commission this Thursday. That'll be at 6 o'clock here in the council chambers. The presentation that's anticipated will not include materials that you'll get ahead of time. It's really very visual, audio-visual oriented, but is designed to also be engaging with you and the Planning Commissioners so that there's a chance to ask questions. I've made a note of Councilmember Seves' request, and I'll pass that along to staff. And we are going to videotape that session. It'll air and also replay, because I know it's of some interest to the community.
Thank you. Mr. Giles.
There's no report, and we're ready to go into closed session if you're ready for that report.
Okay, this is an opportunity for the public to address closed session matters. Do we have any speaker slips, Madam Clerk?
There are no speaker slips.
Thank you very much. City Attorney, would you please adjourn us to closed session?
Yes, there's a need for the City Council to meet in closed session this afternoon on three items: conference with legal counsel on pending administrative proceedings pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1. To confer with its legal counsel with regarding to the following matter of pending administrative proceedings, PERB case number LARR1221M, public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 with regard to city manager evaluation, and conference with legal counsel on anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9C with respect to potential initiation of one matter of litigation. It's anticipated that we will have an announcement on at least one of these items.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to remind the public that our next regularly scheduled meeting will be Tuesday, March the 4th. We are not having an evening session this evening because an item has been pulled. So we'll look forward to seeing everyone on Tuesday, March the 4th, in addition to the joint meeting that we have this Thursday, which is a special meeting with our Planning Commission. Thank you. We are now stand adjourned to closed session.